Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. And those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is the show where we discuss creating our own communities and separating into our own societies. If we are to be a free and independent people, we have to have and control our own land. We want other people to respect us. We want other people to treat us as equals. Well, everybody else in the so-called United States have a homeland. Mexicans have Mexico. Chinese have China. Puerto Ricans have Puerto Rico. Native Americans even have territories that they have limited control over. I say limited because they are still often victimized by the United States government, especially if they have resources. However, the black man and woman in America, we have no place we can call home that we control. Yes, we have Africa and our brothers and sisters in our homeland, but we're not recognized by them. We're such a different people. Can we really fit in there? And should we fit in there? Well, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad tells us that we have to have our own land, and if we're to get respect from other peoples, we have to control our own land, and we have to make it produce. So tonight, we're going to discuss another aspect of community building. If we're building communities, and we have to consider every aspect of taking control and protecting our community. So tonight, we're going to talk about disaster mitigation. How do you plan that? Should we just build the community and wait for a disaster to happen and hope that we can deal with it? Or do we actually plan that as we build our communities? Do we actually plan disaster mitigation into the planning of it. But we know if we totally rely, on our former, on our enemies' disaster mitigation plan, that we're on the bottom. We're on our own anyway. Let's look at Katrina and look at some of the floods that they had recently. If you're in a black neighborhood and a black area, they don't mind opening flood valves and flooding our neighborhoods because, you know, we don't have anything in place to control that. So this show, we are excited to have a guest, Sister Aurelia Muhammad. Those of us who recognize, those of you who recognize her name, she needs no introduction. However, for those of us who are not familiar with Sister Aurelia, I'm going to read a brief bio. And Sister Aurelia, I don't see your phone number on the line. If you are actually on the line using a different phone other than your cell, if you would press the 1, and that way I can recognize you and I can actually open your line. So I'm going to double check and send you a text. And once I get your line open, we'll bring you on. And we can go ahead and start the show. All right. Okay, so our sister, Sister Aurelia, if you're on the line, go ahead and press the 1, and I will bring you on. Press the 1 on your dial. Meanwhile, I'm going to read a brief bio. Like I said earlier, those of you who know who Sister Aurelia is, you don't need an introduction because you're familiar with her. However, those of you who are not familiar with her, Sister Aurelia is an international disaster management instructor. Sister Aurelia is an internationally recognized management instructor with over 27 years of experience. Her background is unique in that she has served as a volunteer disaster action team member, emergency management coordinator for the national and international disasters. Her experience comes from working on some of the worst disasters in the world, ranging from Hurricane Floyd, the Northridge earthquake, Malibu fires, Mozambique floods, Los Angeles riots, 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Rita, St. Louis riots, Sandy, Haiti, and tribal nations. She specializes in training culturally diverse groups, i.e. black folks, and originals, from the disabled, elderly youth, women's shelters, drug rehab centers, foster homes, war refugees, UN disaster relief workers, ex-offenders, and high-risk inner-city populations. Her first-hand experience as a disaster management instructor and disaster coordinator have been requested by FEMA, the Red Cross, the United Nations, police and fire departments, the Governor's Hurricane Conference in Florida, movie directors, religious, business, professionals, and community organizations in the U.S., Mexico, Canada, Europe, Caribbean, and Africa. She received a Congressional Award from the office of the late Stephanie Tubbs Jones for her disaster coordination work for Mozambique, Africa during the floods of 1999. Ms. Muhammad is a volunteer disaster management instructor and coordinator for tribal nations throughout the Southwest. In May 2011, she was given an award as Ambassador of Peace by the Universal Peace Federation under Reverend Moon's Unification Church on behalf of humanity. She is the volunteer coordinator for the Millions More Movement Disaster Management Program. She believes the key to surviving natural or man-made disasters is training of the world's most vulnerable populations to help their communities before disaster strikes on limited income and access to mainstream disaster organizations. So, Sister Aurelia, if you're on, go ahead and press that 1 on your dial, and we'd like to go ahead and start our discussion. If you're on, press the 1 on the dial. Meanwhile, we're going to wait a little longer for you. And I'm going to double check and see if I got a response from my text. Hold on just a minute. I am hoping she will be responding soon. Meanwhile, sometimes we Okay, I see Dr. Ridgey's on the line. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Well, I'm Islam. So we are.
Yes,
still trying to catch up with
Sister Ruth. Yes, sir. We communicated earlier today, and
okay.
I'm sure she'll be on shortly. And I sent a reminder text. It looks like it went through because, you know, here in Brownwood, phone connections are kind of weak, the cellular connections, but I think this one went through. And inshallah, she'll be on pretty soon. Sister Aurelia, if you're on, press that 1 on your dial so I can recognize you.
Yes, and me and Sister Ann, a couple years ago, we went to Sister Aurelia's training that she did down in Jacksonville, Florida. And we learned a lot of things. One of the most fascinating things was this website that you can go to see real-time earthquakes, a map of where earthquakes are happening around the world. And it was just incredible, the number of earthquakes that are going on all the time. But they're usually small, you know, but they are earthquakes. And they do, earth movement, plates move slightly, and it causes earthquakes. But that was quite fascinating. And she gave us information about how to keep up with the weather, that these things are important, that you don't wait until the storm hits you. You try to keep up with the weather around you, and so you can be prepared. And, of course, we in the Ministry of Agriculture established the Staple Goods Project to provide an opportunity for people to have supply, staples, for them to eat and take care of themselves for an extended length of time.
Yes, sir.
Right now, is she on yet? Okay.
No, not
right
yet.
Now.
Sister Aurelia, if you're on, press the 1 on your dial so I can open up your mic. Sister Aurelia, if you're on, press the 1 on your dial so I can open up your mic. And so I sent her another text, and Allah willing, she'll be on shortly.
Okay, well, the corona, they're telling you on the news now, straight up, because of the coronavirus, that it may be wise to have enough supplies to stay in your home 2 to 3 weeks. And Tuesday night, Brother Ruben from Australia even sent us pictures of how the stores were cleaned out of basic items like toilet paper by Chinese nationals who are sending it back to China. And so now they have to restock the stores. Fortunately, they do produce paper products in Australia so they can replenish the shelves. Now, we don't have paper products in the Staple Goods Project, but we do have navy beans, red beans, black beans, rice, honey, raw sugar, and Muhammad Farms whole wheat flour, Muhammad Farms pastry flour, cream of whole wheat, and Sister Ann's cream of whole wheat muffin mix.
Right.
So these soap, you'll need soap, okay? So we got a number of products that will that you need to have in your home in case of disaster where you can't get out, or where when you do go out to find that what you need is not there. So you need to have them stored in your home. So we're going to start the process on March 15th, where people should sign up to be coordinated. If you've been a coordinator, you have to sign up again to be a coordinator each time we do it. This is Staple Goods 19. This is the 19th time that we've done it. And then for those cities that we don't have coordinators, people can go to the website, see the instructions about how to become a coordinator in your city. since the government and the news agencies have put out that you definitely need to have enough stuff in your home to survive for a number of weeks, we feel that it's our duty in the Ministry of Agriculture to let as many of our people know there is a way for you to get these items for yourself, and they're the best items that we can find. Last time we did it, Staple Goods 18, a few months ago, we, with the 75 cities, we shipped to 75 cities, and some of those cities, other cities came in to get stuff from that city. But we need all of the cities where our people live to be a part of this and to order in substantial quantities as a group so that we can service you. You know, somebody asked us, are we going to do online ordering? Well, no, because we don't deliver, we don't have drones or UPS trucks that's going to bring you one bag of beans. Okay? We don't do that because the shipment of the beans, the shipment cost is as much as the beans cost that you can get through the staple goods, for instance.
That's right.
We ship you baby beans for $65 for 50 pounds. Well, it would cost us another $40 to $50 to send that same 50 pounds to you. So instead of you paying $65, you'd be paying $125. Okay? So we figured out a system by which if we work together, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Mr. Farrakhan has instructed us, if we work together with discipline and harmony, we can overcome the distances that we are apart from one another. Now, of course, the best way for us to be able to get products to each other is as we saw at Savior's Day, where all the Muslims were in Detroit, and at their leisure, they come down to the vending area, and they find many of the items that they need. That's what it would be if we had our own communities, where we would have a substantial number of people that could support the different business activities that we can provide. But it is difficult for a business to survive with just 10 believers in a city trying to keep a business going. That ain't going to work. Okay? So this is why we say either you control the community that you live in or you move to a community that you can control. And if you can't sell nobody nothing in your community, you need to get out of that community because that community don't like you. If they won't buy from you, they don't like you. And so if you're there and you have some things, then when the stuff goes down, the question is whether they'll be your friend or your enemy to come and get your thing. So if you cannot develop a relationship with the people around you, you need to go someplace else. That's just common sense. If you cannot get a good relationship with the people who live around you, then you need to move somewhere else where there are people that you can have a good relationship with and do economic exchange with. Because Minister Farrakhan has taught us that business is life itself.
So Dr.
Without
Bisley,
business, yes.
We may have to make an adjustment for tonight's show. It appears that Sister Aurelia is having trouble with her phone. And so she actually lives in a reservation, Indian reservation, an indigenous nation in New Mexico. And so she may be having communication problems. And so until we hear from her, we may just have to carry the show and hope that she could join us a little later.
Let's open up the mic to people who are listening, waiting for her to come, that they can maybe they have their own experiences of either having been trained by her or some other type of disaster training that they've been through or some experiences of how they were able to make it through a disaster, in particular those who have had experiences of how it has helped to be a part of a believing group. I know that when the disasters hit, the rain hit down in Baton Rouge, sister told me how the believers, how they came together to help one another through that. The same thing in Houston. When Houston was hit by that hurricane, that rain, that how the believers came together to help each other out. So if anybody has that experience where the idea of having believers around you or within contact with you, that you can work together, help each other out, how did that work?
Yes, sir.
What are you doing? Other than, one, you should be doing the staple goods, but what are you doing other than the staple goods to prepare your home and your community to survive man-made disasters, whether it be chemical, whether it be biological, whether it be fire, whether it be earthquake, or whatnot. So we would like to open it up, the lines, to those people who have these experiences or expertise in how to survive disasters.
Yes, sir. One of the things I was going to ask Sister, and if she comes on, I hope to answer that question. You know, as we strive to create and control our communities, whether we're controlling where we are or we're moving to an area, to what extent do we rely on city or state resources for our disasters, and to what extent do we create our own? You know, we know if we have our own, we're in total control of it. However, our resources may be limited.
Well, the first thing you have to do is see what are the resources that the city, state, county provide. You know, you need to go and find out if there are places that you can go in case of a disaster. Do they have shelters? Are those stocked? What are the roads going to be like in the disaster? How well do they keep their roads? So those types of things you can find out. Number one, let's see what the area that you live in, how are they ready to handle disaster? And then, of course, from there, you say, well, look, you know you're going to have to look out for yourself as well. So you have to start at one level and then also prepare on a personal level to make sure that no matter whether the state or the local comes through, make it until they do come through, or even if they don't step in disaster preparedness, is for you to think in terms of how you and your family are going to survive in such disasters. So you find what's available that's in your community, in your county, in your state, in your city. And then you look at what you have to do, whether they are in place or not. You need to have things in place. So you have to think that way. You know, that's our main problem is we're like the grasshopper who, as long as it's warm, you know, we hop around. And don't worry about the winter. But the squirrel gathers nuts in different places even. Sometimes he even get where he stores the nuts, you know. Getting ready for what he knows is going to happen, which is winter, and there won't be no nuts. Mm-hmm. So we want to be more like the squirrel than the grasshopper. But you got to think in terms of long term, and not just think in terms of what you want right now, but think in terms of how do I survive, and it's your responsibility to survive. And try to make an environment that your family can survive. That's your responsibility. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we are called the children of Israel for a reason. And that is, we act like children. And we want Israel, America,
Pharaoh,
to take care of us.
Mm-hmm.
Pharaoh. No, by now, America never intended to take care of us other than beyond keeping us in good enough shape to work on the plantation.
That's it.
They don't have plantations anymore. Everything is our responsibility. They're not even worried about us. And like Mr. Farrakhan has told us, they don't need us anymore. So what do you do with a tire that you don't need anymore? What do you do with anything?
Especially if they still want it to be taken care of.
Right. If it's going to cost you to take care of something that you can't use anymore, the wise thing to do is to get rid of it. So they don't need us. Then the wise thing for them to do is to get rid of us. That's just the wise thing to do if they don't need us, because they only wanted us here because they needed us to do what they wanted us to do. They didn't bring us here because they loved us. They brought us here because they needed us. Now, if you marry someone and have children, okay, because you love them, okay, then you've taken on that responsibility. Therefore, you are responsible for them. But they didn't love us. They never loved us. They only brought us over here to use us. And now that they have no more use for us, then they are eliminating us. And we have to grow up and stop being children and realize that our step parents, Israel, these are our step parents. They don't want us anymore. They have no need for us anymore. And we are going to have to take care of ourselves and think like grown-ups, responsibility, not just having fun, not just going to parties. One thing, you look in the black community, the type of business that you have, you know, thank God we got beauty salons and places to get your hair barbers, but then you got churches, where you talk about going to heaven after you die, and then you got clubs where everybody go on Friday, Saturday night to fight sometimes, but mostly to have a good time. The institutions like the nine ministries, do we frequent those? Okay? We go to school just to get a job. Not to learn anything other than what we need to get a job. So the resources that are available in the libraries, we don't use. Just like these phones. Google can pull you up a lot of stuff. You can learn a lot of things on YouTube. But what do we spend most of our time with? Watching people tell jokes. Entertainment. We want to be entertained. And that's the way of a child. Child always wants to be entertained. So we have to grow up now. I don't know. To me, it's fun being grown. What I mean is
fun being what?
Being grown. I mean, I like the idea of being responsible and to make things happen. Okay? I just don't like the idea of living a frivolous life from one pleasure-seeking experience to the next. To me, it's shallow. And considering that we're not in heaven, we're in hell, is dangerous. So we know what happened with Katrina. Okay? We know what happened with Katrina. So why would we put ourselves in a position like that again, to be left out there alone and then gunned down when we go and try to find something that we need to survive? So you need to have a plane. You need to have things in your home. You need to know how to get in contact with and help each other out. You need that. So hopefully we have some people who are online who have had that experience that they can share with us, or if they have some questions about what you need in your survival kit, they can call in.
Brothers and sisters, press that 1 if you want to share an experience, or if you have a question to contribute to the conversation. We're talking about preparation disaster preparation, disaster mitigation, and the responsibility that we should have as we are striving to become an independent and respected people. How can we do that in regards to preparing for disasters? Nothing we can do is people ask me, I talk to people, it's like, wow, what can we do? But this coronavirus is coming here, and people are getting sick, and people are dying. And, you know, when I talk to Muslims, I say, well, we got the cure. I said, the only thing that's available is how to eat to live in the Muslim program. I mean, if they come up with some vaccines, I mean, I'd be damned if I take a vaccine. You know, what the heck that's going to be in the end of it. It could be experimental at that.
Well, you know, there are some black people who still take the influenza shot every year.
I would say most of us probably do.
Well, I haven't taken no influenza shot, as far as I know, ever. And I do not get the flu. I may have had the flu once or twice in my life, but on a yearly basis. And the people who I know get shots, they catch some they catch flu every year.
Yeah, they get
sick. So what's that? Okay, and so you can trust these people to stick something beneath your first defense system. Your skin is your first defense system. It's very, very complicated. It's very, very powerful. And it keeps viruses and other pathogens out of your body. Keeps it on the outside so you can wash it off. But now you're going to take some material from a person who has a history of poisoning people and allow them to stick that beneath your defense system and to think you're going to be all right. To me, it's amazing that we are still here, the tribe of Shabazz. Because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad warned us in the 50s not to take the polio vaccine. And now it's coming out more and more that the polio vaccine was tainted with cancer, tainted with viruses that can cause cancer. So why would you continue? Well, I think I know why. Because we really want to believe in them because, as Minister Farrakhan said, they are our God. They have made us into themselves, and we love them. Because they give us nothing except to believe in them. And we
I
want
guess the
to
alternative,
believe in them.
Yeah, the alternative is to believe in ourselves and our God. And we definitely don't believe in ourselves. So we'll take whatever the white man has to offer, because whatever he has to offer is better than dependent on somebody black.
They have completely destroyed our self-confidence. And so this is why I really appreciate the believers who are in the Ministry of Agriculture and are on the Staple Goods Project. Because over these many years, we have learned how to depend on one another. And we have learned that for the most part, we can be dependable. I mean, you know, we have little glitches, you know, every now and then, but in the end, we get it all done. We get it all right, you know. And it's a good feeling to get it all done.
That's right.
To get it all right. To come through, to tell people, we want you to believe in us, to order the product, to pay us in advance, and we're going to get it to you. And it's going to be a better product than you can get in the store at a comparable price, if not lower. And then to do it. And then to satisfy that promise. See, that's the beginning of nation building. Okay, that is to make your word bond, and bond is life. Without the word, without a bond, there is no life. And what we have done, experience what it is like to put out a word and then make it bond. You're actually building the confidence in each other necessary for long-term survival and nation building. So I think the members of the Ministry of Agriculture for working through difficulties together so that we can show that nation building is not a pipe dream. For us to have our own
That's
nation
right.
is not a pipe dream. It's just a matter of enough of us making the decision to make it happen. But unfortunately, we have naysayers all around us, you know, telling us, "Not y'all need to do that. Why you need to do that? What's going to happen? What's happening to you now?" I mean, how many of y'all are really happy where you are in your city?
Good question.
I was just up to New York back in January. And, man, every morning I'm listening to the radio, the news, and they're talking about how the highways, the roads are all cluttered with accidents and stopped up and how it's taking people 2 hours to get to a 30-minute trip. It's taking them 2 hours to do it. And then on the way home, it's the same thing. It's ridiculous. Why? We knew why we went up there. It's because of the jobs. But now the jobs don't cover what you need to survive up there. So you're working two and three jobs just to survive, whereas before you went there because you can get a better job so that you can live better.
Right.
But now you're working up there just to survive, and you're not living better than you could live if you came back down south. But many of us up north have such an engram about what happened down here, the lynchings and the burnings and the shootings and the killings that happened back here in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, that they have heard these things even though they never experienced them. They heard about them, and they're scared to come down here. But that's changing. The reverse Underground Railroad is in effect. People are moving out of the city, coming back to their native land, where their parents and grandparents had land, and they're coming back home to rebuild again. So we thank Allah for making this happen. We thank the enemy for pushing them to do this. I mean, the enemy is treating them so bad up in these cities and on the highways and the byways that it's just forcing people out. People say, "I just can't take this no more. I need to protect my family. I got to get out of here." I mean, that's what happened up there in Milwaukee, up there at the Coors Miller place. Well, this brother just got tired of continual harassment from the white employees, and he just decided that he would kill everybody he could that was messing with him, and then himself. That's a shame that you have let it go that far. But those of us who work in those environments, we know it's real. We know it's real.
Mm-hmm.
How much can somebody take before they break? So we need to think in terms of look at disaster preparedness as a parent preparing to get out of the disaster that you're living in. Many of us are living in a disaster. Our lives are disaster. The future of our children is a disaster. We need to take emergency management, emergency steps.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at what do we need to do to make things better for us and our family, because this is not healthy. For instance, that brother in Milwaukee, that's just was not healthy, what he has been through for years. This is not the first time it happened. For years he went through this. You know, did he learn the lesson? Why go back there, man? But, hey, the money's good. You know,
Yes, sir. Yeah, our whole, Dr. Richard, our whole survival here in the United States is a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, we know that America is going to come down, and we're seeing all the signs. And it's not going to be a graceful fall. It's going to be a disaster. And if we're not prepared for small disasters, how can we be ready for the big disaster that comes when this country falls and it falls on top of us, you know? And so we need to
one of the psychological reasons that we don't prepare for disaster is that we don't want to accept that there will be one. You know, it's like somebody says, "You're taking the fun out of life." We're taking the fun out of life by dealing with the reality that you need to be careful in life. So you just want to be a grasshopper then. You know what I mean? You just want to be a bunny. You just want to be, you want to be Peter Pan. You know, you don't want to grow up. You don't want to play all the time. Well, I'm sorry. You were a baby. You played. Now you're not. Now you have to find another way to enjoy life other than play. But people want to play.
Sport.
You know, Mr. Farrakhan said the definition of fun was, I think he said, a relentless pursuit of meaningless pleasure.
Wow.
A relentless pursuit of meaningless pleasure. That's fun.
He said, that's why I think we believe in heaven after we die. I mean, we really think that there's nothing better to be floating on a cow, drinking, and, you know, sitting on your back and not having to do nothing for the rest of your, I guess, existence, because your life's not there, because you did. So you're floating on the cloud and you're seeing all the folks, and you're all sitting there just singing and listening to music.
You know,
I would think that gets pretty boring after a while.
Well, I don't, you know, I don't go for that no more. I don't go for that's the reason why. You know what? I just believe they accept that, knowing that it's a lie, because they're cowards, brother.
Okay.
Cowards. They don't want to go up against a real Satan, a real devil. They don't want to go up against the evil that exists in the world. And so, because they're cowards, they make this up in their head. Well, this will be better by and by. You know, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. So, you know, the Lord allow it like this. So, but he got a better place. He got a better. No, you're just a damn coward. And then you're producing. Then you're producing more babies to come in this world to catch this hell that you're too much of a coward to touch. You don't want to fix it. You just want to let somebody else worry about it. But you want to bring baby into what you say is hell, what you say is this is Satan's world. So why would you bring children into Satan's world? And then here you are, just hanging around to leave it to go to heaven. Why bother producing children to live in the same predicament that you're trying to get away from? Think about that. You going every day to Sunday church to get away from this planet so you can go to heaven after you die, yet you're producing babies to come to this planet to be ruled by the same evil people that are ruling this planet. That's just cowardice. Sorry.
And we look like, yes, sir. It looks like Sister Ann has joined us, Dr. Ridgely.
Hi, Slum Alaikum.
Yes, Slum.
Well, Alaikum Slum, ma'am.
Yes. I didn't want to stop, Dr. Ridgely. I just wanted to let you know that I was on and listening. But what I can add is that he is so right. Our people are cowards. We just don't want to stand up against evil, and we see it and live in it every day, every day. If someone came to us and told us that there's evil around you and that you could do something about it, most of us would go in our houses and close our doors. It's not my business, but it is your business. You're living in it. It may not be affecting you at the moment, but it will at some point. So that's all I wanted to say. I didn't want to stop him. I was enjoying the conversation, and I just wanted to let you know I was on.
Well, thank you, Sister Ann. And, you know, she's the softer side of me. But she said just as hard as I am, but she knows how to say it in a better way. So Sister Ann, me and you went to that training with Sister Aurelia. What are some of the things that you picked up from that training?
Oh, you would have to ask me that.
Okay, well, I'll let you think about it a little bit.
Well, what I picked up was basically she deals with dealing with the emergency management agencies and how you have to deal with them. Now, she did share some things about the inner workings of that. You know, they are, you know, they have all of the resources, but they are not fair. You have to have someone there, like Sister Aurelia, who's looking out for black people to make sure that they get a fair shake. So it's not always fair wherever you go. That's why I'm convinced that we have to set up our own emergency preparedness stations wherever we are. We need to get away from depending on them, the Red Cross. You know, the Red Cross, the money doesn't go where it's supposed to. They're
That's
doing
right.
audit right now as to where the money is supposed to go, and we look at all of the countries that have had disasters, and in Puerto Rico, for example, I heard on the news that, and this was the U.S. government charging the people, I think it was something like $7 for a screw, for each screw that they were going to need to do something, you know, like $7 a screw. And just think, you're going to need thousands of screws, and you add that up. So the money is coming right back to the U.S. when you charge exorbitant prices like that. And I can't remember what they said it was costing for a hammer, maybe like $100 or something of that nature. But, you know, it's ridiculous.
Mm.
In other words, evil comes out after disaster.
Right.
In other words,
the
disaster
right.
just brought out more evil because it made people vulnerable to need the system, and then the system shows you its teeth the way it is. So in a disaster, like they did down in Puerto Rico, like they did in Katrina, then the teeth come out. The beast shows itself because now you're vulnerable. And so we have to think in terms of getting away from the beast, setting up our own. And I just want the opportunity to prove that we can set up a better world based on freedom, justice, and equality. We can do a better job than our enemy has done. We can do a better job for him than he is doing for himself. We can definitely do a better job for us and people like us. So we don't have to discriminate to do the right thing for everybody.
Yes, sir. And we have another caller on the line. Looks like it's Sister Majida. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Majida.
Wa alaikum salam. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Like Sister Ann, I was just listening to Sister Ann say, you know, we're listening. I wanted to comment and enjoying the show as well. I wanted to comment. You brought something up, Dr. Ridgely, when you said the evil comes out in disasters and situations like Katrina and what we saw there. And I thought about one of Sister Aurelia's classes, and she set up a scenario that would represent a disaster. People had lost loved ones that they couldn't find, and, you know, just trying to replicate a Katrina-like situation among us in the mosque. She gave certain people certain cues and certain tasks and didn't give, you know, those same instructions to others. I tell you, this is one of the things she said, all we have is our Islam in a situation like this. All we have is our Islam. That's going to set us apart. Because like you said, Sister Ann, they're not going to do anything for us, and they're looking for opportunities to take advantage. But we keep our Islam. And I tell you, the situation, it was, if you didn't know that it wasn't real, walking in, you would think it was a real disastrous situation. We just lost our Islam in just a simulation, in just a situation of disaster. We saw things that, you know, And so the emphasis was in a time such as Katrina, we have to hold on to our Islam. So we have to be studied. It has to be ingrained in us. It has to be natural. It has to be what comes up out of situations. It can't be something that, you know, we got to go look for in a time such as that. It has to be just as natural as breathing. Because I tell you, she set that situation up, and it was really amazing how some of us acted in a simulated disaster situation. So I just wanted to say that that was something that I took away in one of her trainings, and I have never forgotten it. I've never forgotten it.
Could you give us some example or what do you mean by lost our Islam?
I mean, she set up like a waiting room situation where people had needs, and then they were going to get those needs met by those who represent Red Cross or any organization that you come to in order to receive help. So people are sitting in the so-called waiting area, waiting on their turn. And, you know, you have your needs, you're afraid, maybe your child is missing, you just don't have the patience to just sit and wait on a system that's really not made for you. So, you know, I mean, sisters were screaming, yelling in the middle of the floor. They had to be carted out by brothers who were acting as the security. I mean, some of us looked like we were just waiting on an opportunity to go there. I'm telling you, it was really amazing. It was really amazing just how quick some of us just went to the other side. I mean, just, you know, we're trying to make things happen. We're trying to get things done. And it just bears witness that, like you said, we need our own, because if we're going to be waiting on others who don't have our best interests at heart, you know, they're going to make us wait. They're going to not help us. They're going to do all manner of things that they can. And so if that's all we have, that anxiety that, you know, some of us might have built up, and, you know, not having enough wherewithal to say, look, I'm going to go out here and do what I need to do, and I'm not waiting on you to do it. You know, some of us didn't have enough of that wherewithal just in the simulation. It's like, I'm waiting on this person and they're not helping me, so now I'm just going to go off. Rather than come to this person to help me, I understand from the teachings who these people are, and I know that they're not for my help. So let me get whatever I can, if anything, and move on. We didn't do that. We didn't act as though, you know, the power was with us. We acted as though we really needed these people to help us, and if they're not going to help us, we're just going to go berserk. It was... I just watched her stand there and look at us in amazement.
Wow. Wow. That's, I have this saying, and you bear witness to it in this experiment, that if I really believed that I need you, if I believe that I need you, I'm going to figure out a way to get along with you.
Mm-hmm.
So the people in that
right.
waiting room didn't believe that they needed each other.
Mm-hmm.
They believed that they needed the person on the other side of that room.
Mm-hmm.
Other, you know what I mean? They believed that they needed the Red Cross, or they needed FEMA, or they needed this from the white man.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't feel that they needed each other right there in that room. Each other. So they treated each other bad, trying to get something from the people on the other side of the room, on the other side of the curtain.
Right.
So this is the exact thing that's happening. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that the white man has stepped between us and the universe. And now we are trying to suck off the mammary gland of the white man to get to the universe. Instead of us depending on each other to get to the universe, we're depending on the enemy. And we treat each other like children fighting over that one nipple. We got one nipple and five children fighting over it.
Right.
Because we're dependent on that nipple and don't realize we could build another nipple. Okay? That we can get around that problem if we work together. But instead, they make us believe in them and not believe in each other, and then cause more problems amongst each other. And this has been their modus operandi.
Wow.
Divide and conquer. Get us to depend on them and then drop out, you know what I mean, fail us, and then blame us We blame each other on the failure of the enemy, of the system that failed us. We blame each other.
Right. Looking to see who caused them to leave. Because I was doing everything I needed to do. Must be something you did. Right. Because, you know, just looking at that scenario, what if a group of us had gotten together and just decided, sister, what do you need? Brother, what do you need? Let's all of us, we don't need to wait in this waiting room. It's clear that, you know, they don't have our best interests at heart, and they're too overwhelmed to help us. How about we just all get together? Let's just all go. I'll help you look for your mom. Then we'll go and look for brother, sister. You know, had we done that, I imagine it would have been a different scenario.
Wow. Well, while we was in, the scenario we was in, I don't remember quite well that we was in Jacksonville, but I don't remember that all that fighting going down like that, though. It perturbed us, but we didn't go off like that.
It was amazing. It was almost hilarious, and in a sense, like I said, in a sense, you know, because I'm standing back looking at it, because it's like, look, okay, my role is I'm supposed to go up to one of these agents and see if I can get some help from them to find my mom. My mom was in a nursing home, and now I don't know where she is. So in my mind, I need to find my mom. So I need to, with intelligence and with some peace, or I need to go try to get whatever information I can get from this person if they're going to help me. You know, and if they can't help me, then I got to go do what I need to do. But me yelling and screaming and jumping up and down and all that, that's what is that going to get me? Like the sister that did it, the brother took her out. The brother picked her up and took her out. And it just amazed me. It just amazed me.
Maybe she was just acting. Maybe she was just acting. She really wasn't emotional like that. Maybe she was just acting.
Oh, some of the acting we did was just turned on so easily, you know, it's just, are we really going to be like that? You know, some of us turned it on too quick. But Sister Aurelia, she did the assessment. She said, I told you, she said, some of us in a time like that, we're going to lose our Islam, and that's all we got.
Well, the question is, will we survive?
Oh, my God. We've been through an hour of trying to survive? Okay. Bring it on, Miss Gaynor.
Praise be to Allah.
Oh, we still have your Nazi next week.
Yes, sir.